Democrats were able to regain the majority in the U.S. House with the results of this month's election. There was initial talk of a blue wave, but then numbers indicated it would be closer to a trickle. As it turns out, the wave was pretty powerful. But could it have been an even better day for progressives if gerrymandering hadn't been put in place by GOP-controlled legislatures in a few states? With me to talk about that via Skype is Justin Levitt, professor at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, and who maintains the All About Redistricting site. Justin, were the positive results for Democrats in U.S. House races an example of countering gerrymandering, or did they happen in spite of gerrymandering?
I think it was in spite of. So what gerrymanders do is they set up a seawall to stop the flow of regular political tides. So we're used to politics running in cycles. Sometimes wave comes in, wave flows out, wave comes in, wave flows out. The Tea Party wave was one. There was a wave in 2008, 2 years before that. This year was also a wave. What gerrymandering does is it tries to stop or at least stem some of that tide. So when the Tea Party wave came in, very quickly Republicans had control of most of the apparatus of redistricting around the country, and they set up a seawall to stop that sort of normal tide flow from running out. So a lot more people held their jobs after the Tea Party wave of 2010 than we might otherwise have expected. This year, there was still a seawall. There was a substantial seawall, although courts did a fair job of knocking some of that down. It's just the tide came over the wall. Gerrymanders aren't absolute prohibitions on the party who's out of power taking control. And here, what you really had was a massive Democratic response, at least comparatively, and that came over the seawall.
Considering some of the states where perhaps Democrats weren't able to make gains, did you notice any? Did you think of any states that maybe where gerrymandering did hold because it was just so strong, even with the Democratic wave, it wasn't enough to overcome it?
Absolutely. I can point to two, actually, North Carolina and Texas. North Carolina is perhaps the more egregious of the two. It's also the case that's leading the charge back up to the Supreme Court this coming term, just to try and see whether the court will do anything about partisan gerrymandering. North Carolina is a quintessentially purple state. In 2008, it was 50-50. In 2012, it was 49-51. In 2016, it was 49-51 or 48-52, depending on exactly where you draw the line. The Republicans had control of the apparatus of redistricting, and they said explicitly and outright, this isn't my speculation, we are drawing the lines so that North Carolina will elect 10 Republican members of Congress and 3 Democratic members of Congress. And the reason we're doing that is because we can't figure out how to draw it so it's 11-2. That is, in a purple state, in a 50-50 state, the lines were drawn very explicitly so that the delegation will be radically skewed to favor Republicans. And sure enough, even in this wave in which Democrats led on the generic ballot by 8 or 9 points, in which they picked up 39 seats and maybe, you know, still counting across the country, in North Carolina, Democrats won 3 seats and Republicans won 10. That is, in North Carolina, the seawall was so strong that it held exactly as it was designed to do.
So the power of gerrymandering is still incredibly in effect. What happened this year? Is there more a possibility of there being a light that shines on this, that there's a possibility of seeing changes? Are you seeing momentum in any way, even based on the results of this month, that there could be changes in that? Or are there certain states that are going to dig in their heels even more to make sure that they're not going to be subject to a wave, that they want to hold on to their power?
I think probably both. The first thing to recognize is that if the Democratic wave had not been that strong, yes, the gerrymandering seawall would have worked even more effectively. It held in North Carolina. It didn't hold in some other states because there really was an enormous blue tide. But had there been a slightly more modest preference for Democrats, Republicans would have cleaned up. And so gerrymandering is still very much a problem. The Supreme Court will be faced with this coming term. There's a case coming out of North Carolina that's back before the Supreme Court. And the facts on the ground couldn't be more stark to set up the challenge for the court. Like I said, the legislative leadership said outright, their goal was to entrench Republicans in power and to do so as forcefully as they possibly could. They couldn't have figured out a way to do it more strongly. So that's a scenario that's going to be front and center before the Supreme Court. The court's going to have to decide whether it will condone such a thing, in which case you can expect a whole lot more of it in 2020. On both sides, I should say, Democrats have not been shy about using this power where they have the control. And that very fact is part of why this latest term's results actually give me some confidence that states will be moving against gerrymandering. In some states, the legislature itself will take action, particularly now that there's a split in some states that were under unified control before. But citizens are also getting fed up. And in a number of states, they followed essentially Arizona's lead by ballot initiatives by citizens, changing the way that the lines are drawn, putting the pen in the hands of people who are more independent and not quite so dependent on following the whim of the legislative leadership.
So do you think there is something there when it comes to counteracting gerrymandering, that it just, you have to have passionate voters who aren't necessarily either left or right, who are not necessarily party affiliated, to be passionate about this and think it needs to change?
That certainly fed into the political results. I think that across the spectrum, whether you're a diehard Democrat or a diehard Republican or somewhere in the middle where you're not sure, or you don't like to join a party but you still have distinct preferences on the ballot itself, I think people across the spectrum recognize that when somebody in the legislature has the power to redraw and occasionally re-redraw to keep going throughout the decade, to redraw the districts to best suit themselves and the members of their political party, that decreases the extent to which they'll listen to citizens. That decreases responsiveness. Actually, what you're seeing is support for changing the system to take away the clear conflict of interest, right? We all kind of recognize the analogy that's often used. You don't want the ref or the umpire or the official officiating a sports event to be playing for one of the teams. And I think that's a fundamental, basic understanding that Americans have. It's pretty common sense. And that crosses party lines for those who are members of a party and those who aren't.
Justin Levitt is an associate dean for research and professor of law at the Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. Justin, thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Of course. My pleasure.